Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. In American Theater Company's production of God of Carnage, we enter a world where two sets of parents are attempting to reconcile their children's conflict. That's a scenario that many parents might recognize. But in Yasmina Reyes's Tony Award-winning play, the parents are just as much in need of counseling as their sons. This dark comedy begins after a play yard incident in which one boy knocks out two teeth of the other. The family of Henry, the boy with the missing teeth, Michael, a self-made wholesaler, and Veronica, a woman who works in an art shop and is writing a book on Darfur, invite Benjamin's parents, Alan and Annette, a deep pockets defense attorney and a wealth manager, to discuss the incident. Very quickly, the veneer of civility wears off as class differences emerge, gender differences uncover themselves, alliance shift, and by the end, God of Carnage resembles a free-for-all that encompasses violence and actual physical illness. Imagine Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf with laughs. Veteran Tulsa stage director Lisa Wilson leads a quartet of actors in this production that runs tomorrow night through May 14th at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Dungeness Theater. And she joins us today to talk about God of Carnage. Lisa Wilson, welcome back to the program. It's such a pleasure to see you and see you directing theater here in Tulsa.
It's so good to see you, and it's good to be back out of the house and back directing.
This play seems very prescient in its way for its commentary on our contemporary inability to negotiate conflict and accommodate divergent opinions. Perhaps, you know, it's hard to imagine that it was probably that way in 2006 when this play was written, but it's certainly a lot worse today. What attracted you particularly to this play?
Well, the idea that we are, we sit down with our facade of facilitating a moderate discussion and expect things to go our way. And these two couples have that. They sit down with their sons have had a conflict in the park. And it's obvious that these two couples have their sons in an upper class school in New York. But the couples come from very divergent classes. We've got one who is a lawyer for a big pharma company, also represents someone at The Hague, you know, at the ICC court, and a wife who is a wealth management person. And in the other side, we have the people who it's their home are inviting them in for this discussion. The wife helps, works part-time in an art store, bookstore, and she has a chapter in a book that she helped to edit, and she's very interested in is publishing her own book on Darfur. And so she considers herself an author, and she's rather boho. And the husband owns a supply store that does domestic products like toilet fittings and doorknobs and frying pans. And he is not on the upper class level. They're very upper middle class, but because they have really fought and earned their way up that way. So we have this divergent group of people meeting in a tense situation because one child struck another child and broke two of their teeth.
And it's interesting, those two children, we never meet them.
We never meet Benjamin and Henry. No, we don't, but we find out some secrets about Benjamin and Henry that aren't on the table when we first begin the discussion.
Yeah, and perhaps why this conflict happened in the first place as the play unfolds.
Yes, exactly. And the play as it unfolds, you know, we find out secrets about the couples, about their personal relationships, about how they're presenting themselves, what they really think about the other people that they're inviting into their home or that they're having to come into, have this meeting that they don't really want to have. And as the play unfolds, we play, in directing the play, I break it down into units. And I found that this time I named the units primarily for games. like the card game War, or Jenga, or Don't Break the Ice, or where you slapjack, where you slap the other person's hands, or darts, so that the actors were thinking about what kind of aggression or what kinds of points they were scoring off of each other. But then I also had places where I said, this is a swap of gender alliance. So they were playing gender tug of war. So that they were looking at how suddenly the two women were on one side and the men were on the other. So that we had masculine symbolism about cigars and the rum, and the women were defending, you know, the home and the values. And so the play is very, very complex, and it is funny as all get out. But it's funny because we laugh and we look at it and we go, oh my God, I think some of those words have come out of my mouth. And oh, how could I possibly do that?
It's often described as a dark comedy.
Yes.
But it's also kind of a bickering comedy, which is, you know, that one, because it happens in one room, there's no sense of movement. And it's basically a war of words.
It is. It's physical, but yeah. It is a war of words. A couple of moments in particular, it gets physical. It's not as bad as Virginia Woolf, but it is in that it is more a comedy. But it definitely escalates to the point where manners no longer serve them, where the words won't work. And that's what we always say is, you know, if words don't work, it breaks down into the physical. In a musical, it breaks out into song or dance. But in this case, it breaks out into physical attack.
Yeah. Now, as I understand it, Yasmina Reza, who wrote this play, who wrote Art, probably her other major famous play, this came from her own background. She had a moment where her kids got into an altercation, and I assume this was
she had read about a similar thing in the newspaper, which was more escalated. And because it was happening on one level in her life and she read about a really escalated version in the newspaper, she said, well, this certainly is not an isolated incident. And in looking at it, going, why are we as adults not able to help solve conflicts? And why are we not teaching our children how they really are supposed to solve conflicts? And what is it that makes them pick up a stick and go to war when they're 11 years old? And in the play, one of the characters said, well, you know, there is, I believe, in the God of Carnage. That the God of Carnage is still there and still rules. And the woman is saying, no, no, no. You know, we live in Western society and I believe in Western society. And, you know, I am not this. So everyone is trying to state their philosophy, their point of view, what they think and what they see. And they can jump over a fence faster than you have ever seen. Sometimes you're going, foom, 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 foom. How did they make it over that fence so fast? Because some of them change sides very fast.
Interesting. Well, you know, this play was originally written in France. It was written for a French audience. It's been converted by Christopher Hampton, who's an amazing translator.
Oh, he's a wonderful playwright.
Yeah, and playwright too. So does it have that sensibility of, you know, two French families coming together, or
it has a very different... I think he's done a really good job of putting it into the New York ambiance. He's got references that put it down in a specific place in New York. I know our designer, Richard Ellis, was saying, oh, well, here's the bus stop. And he came in one morning and said, look, there's that bus, that subway accident that had happened. Well, that's like two stops away from the park where this altercation takes place. So, So, yeah, we have, you do your research and you try to understand exactly where these people are living. And when they make a reference to, oh, look, I can see the F train out of your window, that the F train is going to take him back uptown in order to go back to his big meeting with Big Pharma, and how these people are living their lives, what their context is in living in New York.
The interesting conceit of this is, you know, this is written in early 2000s, and that these two families are trying to get together and civilly have this conversation. I think the last 5 to 8 years, you know, maybe have we even, do we even still have that ability is one question I have.
What, to sit down and have
Just to have this, these civil conversations, because so much of us is just like, you know, it's dangerous water.
It is dangerous water. I think that the idea of having a civil conversation, and in particular with people who are having their children in a special level school, somebody who says, I pay X number of dollars and I am putting my kids in this school that's in the pipeline that's going to get them into Yale or Princeton or whatever, and so my children are supposed to behave in a certain way. And as a parent of that child, you know, when they're doing Charlie's Aunt as the, you know, play for Parents' Day, you know, we're, our children should be able to talk about it when they do bad things, and that's what they're there to arrange.
Yeah.
So it is the expectation. So, yes, I think that we are back to that place now that we're not afraid we're going to infect everyone. We're trying to be back to that place of assuming normalcy.
Yeah.
And so I do think that the going back to the movies, going back to the theater, going back to having meals in restaurants, going back to getting to see people face-to-face like we are, is a commitment to positivity in human relations and a future. And this play is about believing in something positive and a future, even these people have a lot of problems.
Yeah, a lot of problems and a lot of conflict.
A lot of conflict.
My guest today is Lisa Wilson, who's directing American Theater Company's production of Yasmina Reyes's The God of Carnage, which runs Friday through May 14th at the Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. One thing about this play is that, you know, the two sets of parents are pretty archetypical. You know, you have a high-dollar lawyer, a man who's got a phone attached to his ear most of the time. You have his wife, a wealth management person, a little neurotic.
Yeah, slightly. She's kind of uptight. It's played by Sean Rooney and Kim Manning.
Yeah. And then you have the other two families, a wholesaler who's risen by his bootstraps, as we like to say, and then Veronica, who is... Again, she works with the arts. She's writing a book on Darfur. She is sort of this humanist element. And the way those archetypical characters are, it sort of sets you up to instinctively be sympathetic to one set of parents.
Well,
but very quickly, this play sort of disabuses that notion.
Right. And the other parents are played by John Burns and Carly Riggs, and they are people who may be well-known. This is a quartet.
Yeah.
And it is like a piece of music, and it shifts and features different people at different times. And people come on as their, quote, archetypes, but they shift very quickly. It's very interesting because... The expectation that the character Michael, that he's going to be this lower class guy, that he's going to be tough, that he's whatever, he's not that in the beginning. There is a huge revelation of the mask he has been wearing that his wife has asked him to put up, and all these symbols that they have been, you know, put forth for their... to make their negotiation go well, because Veronica who is the wife, has a set of things that she wants in this negotiation from the other couple and the other couple's child.
Well, yeah, the Henry, their son, is the one that has his teeth knocked out.
Right, but she wants specific kinds of apology and acknowledgement understanding and retribution in some ways.
Yeah, in the case of the other Benjamin's parents, Alan and Annette, mm-hmm. you know, Alan looks at, I'm assuming he's the character that says there is a God of carnage.
Yes, yes.
Exactly. He's absolutely, you know, he is a man of alpha male, you know, kill or be killed.
Yeah.
You know, he's a high
he's
dollar
a
lawyer. Yeah, he's a shark. Yeah.
And he has tried cases at the ICC and he goes, you know what, the kids in Africa where you're talking about Darfur, you know what, they are killing at 8 years old. So, yeah, sorry, pardon me if I'm not so sensitive to an 11-year-old picking up a stick and hitting another kid in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And we kind of go,
are there many moments like that where you're just kind of gasp?
Collectively, you gasp or you laugh because you go, oh, my God. You know, it's like when he's describing how their big pharma medical team or the lawyer team is responding to the case that they are representing in Big Pharma. You're going, ah, oh my God, really?
So one of the things that happens during this play is you have two sides that seem to be pretty well defined at the very beginning of this play, but everything fractures through the course of the play.
Mm-hmm.
How does that go about?
It comes about because Michael, the character, and Alan, the character, begin to see what they have in common. After really kind of doing this dance around each other, you know, masculine apes dance that they do around each other, and after Veronica has been, his wife has been so terrible that it comes to, she's revealed a secret about what's happened to the gerbil in the house, and he's had a breakdown about that just about. And finally, Veronica attacks her husband literally, physically, and Alan pulls her off of him, and they wind up drinking rum and talking about what children do to a marriage. So you wind up with them finding what they have in common and their commonalities, especially when they're drinking this really great 10-year-old English Harbor Reserve rum, begin to become stronger than what was between them. And the women are going, what's wrong with you? How can you think that? How can you possibly think that? So the women are having their bond put together. But once again, we get back to what the kids. We get back to how can you say that about my child? And explosions happen again because...
And so many conversations come to the end when you say...
My baby. You can't say that about my baby. Yes.
Well, tell us what each of your actors bring to these particular characters in the case of Alan and Annette and Michael and Veronica.
Well, Michael and Veronica, John and Carly bring to this a wonderful chemistry. They also bring to it this great sense of honesty and they can do part of the earthiness and the commitment to their feelings, especially Carly, and then John when he when he savors his Neanderthalness and his revelations about how he feels about the children. He is so into it. It is wonderful. He can flip his feeling from one to another in a way that you are just entranced by their abilities. Sean is a marvelous actor, and he is on that phone. And when he is on that phone and committed to that phone call, you absolutely believe there's somebody else on the end of that phone. And poor Murray, who is on the other end of that phone, is getting his worst. And yet he can turn around and come right back into the what's happening here. So what were we talking about? Ah, right, thump guns. And we're back in the conversation here. And he turns on a dime and is back in the attack mode here. Or he's looking at Woof Woof, his wife, his pet name for his wife, who is sick. Kimberly, who is a marvelous actress, goes from this very self-contained person to someone who, through her nerves, is physically ill, made physically ill by her nerves, and then is able to come back in after being physically ill by her nerves and is able to drink that rum and take over the room. So she goes from one extreme to the other to trashing the house. And the other thing that happens is, because of the casting, Kimberly is an African-American actress. And by having an African-American actress, it changes some of the meaning of what is being said. It drops another level of meaning and tension into part of the world. And this is a world that we live in. And so I cast Kimberly because she's wonderful, but I also knew that it would put another level of tension and meaning into part of the thing.
It certainly puts a lot of tension into the conflict over Veronica's book on Darfur.
Some of what Michael says when he reveals himself to be a Neanderthal. Yes.
My guest today is Lisa Wilson, who is directing American Theater Company's production of God of Carnage, which runs Friday through May 14th at the Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Earlier, you were talking about, you sort of set up your cast for games to sort of understand the various sort of beats of the play.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe explain one and how that sort of relates to the action they're portraying at a given time, like Don't Break the Ice, for example?
Yeah, Don't Break the Ice. So when you're playing Don't Break the Ice, the kids' game, you've got the little hammer and there's a little penguin sitting on there.
Sort of like Jenga
right.
too.
Yeah, and you're trying to get your piece out, and you don't want to be the one that makes the little penguin fall through. So you're determined to win by doing that, making the other guy lose. So you are very carefully, as you're dropping your information in, you're trying to drop your information in and make your point very clearly and making it finally the other person's fault so that they're going to be the one.
It's a zero-sum game, but there's also a veneer of civility?
Civility, exactly.
Yeah.
And with Jenga, you can play Jenga, and there are so many ways to play Jenga. That's one of the games that they play, and then I call it extreme Jenga. We have a version of that. But some people are, they tap on the little Jenga thing as they go through, and some people are they're the people who go, and they push the Jenga thing through, and they put it on the top, and so that it's balancing barely, which makes those who are nervous really nervous. And when you play tug of war, that's a really, tough game in which you are totally physically invested. Coming out of that, I then have the actors. One of the things that they do for themselves is we play verb so that they do a rehearsal. And this is fairly early on, in which they have to verb the other person. So when you verb somebody, you have to have an active verb. It has to be something you could do to an object. Like you can kick a ball, you could punch a ball, you could even tickle a ball, you can elevate a ball, you can, slap a ball, you can, but you can't, I want you to understand a ball. You can't, right? So it has to be active. And what that does is it pushes them to find physicalization with what they're doing. And very often that will carry through to gesture life and even to their silhouettes and to the kinds of physical that they're doing. So those two kinds of things help them begin to open up and crack open the physical world of the play and get out of their heads and into the emotional life.
Because you're reading the script, you're internalizing the script. And you need
to drop it down into your gut.
Yeah. Do you often see some of the physical movements they're doing in this early part show up in their character?
Yes.
What's that like? I mean, it's
perfect. It's cool. It's wonderful. It's wonderful because when you see it happen, when you see them suddenly, where they've got the phone and they're going like this and they're yelling at the phone, and it's something that they did when they were verbing, you know, when they were going to, they were strangling the ball. It was, you know, when they were strangling. And you go, yeah, that's what they're doing to that cell phone. Or when they were pinning it down, something, and you see that happening. And it's become a subtle gesture, you know, and follows through. It's just really cool. The audience isn't going to know it, but
no.
I do.
Yeah, right. But at the same time, because it is a this is played for comedic effect.
Yes.
A thinking comedy.
A thinking comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That physicality is very important to sell the comedy.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always say you should be able to turn off your English translator. And we had a rehearsal last night during the big rainstorm, right? And last night I told them the obstacle was the huge rainstorm and the hail. But at some points, you know, it sounded like people were whispering because they were at the top of their voices, but you could barely hear them. But their physicality got so clear because they were working to be understood through their physicality, through the obstacle of that rainstorm. And I expect to see a lot of that carry over to the rehearsal tonight because they were so much more into their bodies and their physicality. It just amped it up. And the point is they're always working honestly. As long as they're working honestly, this play works. Mm. And that's the key because it gets big, but it's got to be honest.
Is it easy to be dishonest in a program like this, in a show like this?
You can be, but only if you go, oh boy, this line's going to be funny, so now I'm going to be funny.
Laying for it, yeah.
And if you're going to go be funny, it won't work.
Yeah. Well, The God of Carnage opens Friday at the PAC. Sounds like it's going to be a good show.
It is, and I have to applaud also all the people who are working on it because we have Lise Kiefer, who is the props goddess that you wouldn't believe, and Lori Carlson and Tracy Wittenberg, who are stage managers, and you wouldn't believe what they have to do to get all the props because when you have vomit rehearsals before every show, you know— It does make for an interesting run.
Lisa Wilson, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Lisa Wilson is the director of American Theater Company's production of Yasmina Reza's God of Carnage, which runs tomorrow night through May 14th at the Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. For more information on the production, visit tulsapac.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.